Hi everyone, I'm Liam and welcome to another episode of Exploring the NQS, a bonus series from the Early Education Show exclusively for our Patreon supporters. So if you're listening to this, that means you're supporting the main show, which means I want to start with a big thank you. The main show will always be free, but those of you who choose to actually support us financially really, really help us out. In Exploring the NQS, I take a look at one element of the National Quality Standard, one at a time, until I've covered all 40. My background is as an early childhood educator and teacher, centre director, and I currently oversee professional learning and development for Northside Community Service, a not-for-profit early education provider based in Canberra. Alright, let's get started. Alright, we're here with the second to last element of the National Quality Standard, element 7.2.2, Educational Leadership. It's part of Quality Area 7, Leadership and Service Management, and it's the second element of Standard 7.2, Leadership. The description for this element is, the educational leader is supported and leads the development and implementation of the educational program and assessment and planning cycle. Alright, so what's this one all about? In one way, this is very straightforward. This is about the educational leader and the way they undertake that role in services under the National Quality Framework. So really, the NQF is telling us there needs to be a person at the centre taking leadership of the requirements of particularly Quality Area 1, really. So this is right at the end of the NQS. We're sort of circling right back to the start, to Quality Area 1 educational program and practice. And one of the reasons this is both simple, so that's relatively simple, but also quite complex, is this was one of the significant changes when the NQS started in 2012, that there was this requirement to have a person appointed to sort of manage this. And this was an acknowledgement and understanding that different parts of the sector prior to the NQF and different states and territories were taking the educational component of it, doing it differently. So this was about saying, you know, there needs to be someone there who is leading and driving this, because otherwise, you know, maybe something gets new to services. In terms of this series, this is quite a complicated one, I think, to tackle in 15 minutes, because I want to spend more time talking about the background about the decision. It's a fascinating decision for me, but we don't really have time for that there. I'm going to talk a little bit about it as we go through, but I'm really going to try and stick to what the NQF is asking us here. But like I said, what this is all about is really there is someone at the service who takes responsibility for making sure this is happening. Okay, so what can we think about in terms of educational leadership in practice? So, you know, services across the country, people listening to this will have really different experiences of what this means. There's limited direction under the NQF in terms of how the educational leader role is sort of enacted. There's a bit of guidance, and we have the wonderful new resource, the Educational Leader Resource, which has been developed with practitioners and people from all over the country. And that's really recent. That was only from last year, 2019, that we have this resource. But there's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of different ways that this one can be enacted. So the first thing for me in terms of in practice is really that for every service, there's a really clear understanding of what that role is for that service. And we can take that, you know, particularly right from the start, which is the position description. And I know if Doreen Blythe, who's someone I've known online for quite a while, and is the head of the Educational Leaders Association, this is a point she makes all the time, is that often there isn't even really a specific position description in a service for this role. And that's really a requirement. We need to identify what that is. So having a position description in place, you know, for me, using language of the National Quality Framework, using language, you know, from this very element would be really important to give people who are taking that role a clearer understanding of what's being asked of them by the service and by the educators, by the organisation and by the leaders. So a position description is really important. There's also a really important point here about the clear understanding of that role is where it fits in the leadership and management structure. One of the things that I find interesting with the creation of this role is, you know, we don't have, you know, a health and safety leader, we don't have a physical environments leader, all those kind of things. We've sort of taken Quality Area 1 and sort of said we need a separate role for this. But what that can sometimes mean is that it's often someone who's not the centre director, who's not in the management, someone who's not, you know, directly has people reporting to them, but are seen to be sort of leading this part of the national quality standard for a service. And I think that can be challenging if it's not really clearly called out who's running the show, who's in charge. And we often don't like talking in this way in the sector. We like to say, you know, everything's collegial and every, you know, and it's a democracy and all those kinds of things. But, you know, there needs to be someone running the show and who's in charge. So that leadership, even that line management piece, you know, who's reporting to whom, who's leading and, you know, growing those responsibilities is a really important thing. And that's important for both the educational leader and the, you know, and the educators and the director, so people know who they're going to. The worst thing that can happen is the educational leader sort of says, well, we need to do it this way. And the director says, well, no, actually, you know, I want to do that way. And for an educator to be in the middle of that can be quite challenging. But this is solvable if we have really clear understandings of who is leading what. And I'm going to talk a bit about that more in the nominated supervisor, the suggestions for nominated supervisor section. The second thing about being in practice is if the educational leader role is separate from the centre director, or even if it's not really, but particularly if the centre director is not doing that role as well, is the role really needs to be focused in classrooms. So the role should not be seen as or interpreted as someone who just sort of looks over at the documentation that other team leaders are doing and sort of providing, you know, notes and feedback. That could be part of the role, certainly. But I think sometimes we see this role as kind of separate from the actual work happening with children in classrooms. So it's really not separate to that work. It's an important part of that work. So the educational leader should be in classrooms, should be visible alongside educators working with children, should be contributing to and reviewing, you know, documentation alongside educators. That, to me, is the only way that role can work. You can imagine, and you might have even seen this, whether in a this specific educational leader role or another role where, you know, someone who's sort of sitting away in an office just commenting on other people's work, it's very hard to make that work. It's very hard for that person to be credible and taken seriously. So focused in classrooms is a huge part of the role for me. And I sometimes get worried when I see advertisements for educational leader roles which call themselves off-the-floor roles. And I just think, you know, that's the wrong way around. The educational leader needs to be, you know, immersed in classrooms, immersed with children and educators and, you know, looking at the practice of what's happening. Because as we talked about all through Quality Area 1, documentation is only a part of Quality Area 1 and a relatively small part. It's educational program and practice. What's happening in classrooms that's being planned for, the discussions taking place between educators, that's where the educational leader needs to be spending a huge amount of their time. And then really the next thing to think about with in practice is kind of repeating some of the stuff we covered in Quality Area 1, which is really clear expectations for how the service is approaching that. So you don't want a really vague approach. You also don't necessarily want classrooms going off and doing their own thing. You want to have a clear expectations and a clear approach to Quality Area 1 that's really based, you know, foundationally on the National Quality Framework documents. Obviously, the Early Years Learning Framework, but also, you know, the Educator's Guide, the National Quality Standard itself. So making sure that the educational leader is coming from a position where, you know, they're not doing things because they happen to like it or because that's the new fad on the block. The educational leader is following a service approach that's endorsed and understood by everyone, and we're really just trying to nail that approach across the service. The easiest way for the educational leader role to work is when we've reached a point where everyone has the same foundational understandings of why they're doing what they're doing, because then the educational leader can come in and support people to be engaging in that process, engaging in that understanding. And if people understand the approach for why they're doing what they're doing at the service, it means they have a good understanding of the requirements of the National Quality Framework. And that's a great thing for educators to take into classrooms and to take with them into their future career. One of the things that's mentioned under educational leadership is the focus on, you know, mentoring and professional development, which is really important. But it shouldn't be just about, you know, specific, you know, things that are separate from the NQF, really helping educators to understand the NQF and why those requirements are there. You know, if you can do that, that means an educational leader's doing a great job. And particularly, you know, really focusing on the planning cycle. I think if I was in an educational leader role, a role I've only ever held once, I would be really spending a lot of time on the planning cycle. We did an episode on that right at the start of this series. And for me, it is the thing. If you can get a good understanding of it, you're really along the way to understanding why we do particular things in Quality Area 1, why that's so important. I think it's the most difficult thing to get a hold of, but once you do, it really opens up the process for how you're doing particular things. All right, let's have some suggestions for nominated supervisors here. I'm going to start out with my first controversial one. I know a lot of people are not going to agree with this, but and I'd be delighted to hear feedback. The first thing for me is if you're a center director, if you're a nominated supervisor, my strong recommendation is do the role yourself. Take on the educational leader role yourself. I know there'll be people screaming at me in their headphones or in their car as they do this, but hear me out just briefly. For me, it's really important that there is someone who is overseeing the entirety of the national quality, you know, standard approach at a service. Having two separate leaders, and particularly someone who is sort of carving out a particular area of practice that is seen as the leader in that space, separate to the overall leader from the center, I just think is problematic. I don't have, you know, in the 5 minutes left in this podcast, I probably don't have time to convince people. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned it in a main episode of the podcast before. Maybe we need to come back to this at another time. I'd love to have a debate with someone about it. But to me, the importance of leadership means that it's hard to split that up and carve it out into different things. Having one particular leader who can lead and direct things, who is working alongside educators, who is credible, who the people, the educators working in the center, see is the final word in why we're doing what we're doing, I just think is really important. Now, I know that in many cases, we definitely did an episode called Are Center Directors Expected to Do Too Much? So in the main podcast series. So for me to sit here and go, do this as well, I know is crazy and insane, but I'm coming at it from that leadership perspective. I do know, you know, that it may not be possible and that there are particular approaches and structures. And it's not to say the educational leader role can't work separately, but for me, it has to work in terms of understanding that where the leadership lines are, who is reporting to whom, who is setting the tone. If it is a separate role, you have to strongly lead that process, including directing that person to work in particular ways. You have to know what they're doing. You have to make sure that you both agree on an approach before you go out and talk to educators about it. You cannot have two versions of an approach working out there. You cannot have one person saying one thing and another person. So really strongly lead that process if you can't do it yourself. But if you can, I really recommend doing it. And the second thing is, we talked about a lot this back in Quality Area 1, and I've even mentioned it in the section prior to this one, is develop and stick to an approach that you are comfortable with, that you know works, that you understand, that you can work with your team, and just stick to it. I think we can really overcomplicate Quality Area 1. We can get distracted by the new fad. We can get worried about, you know, what Reggio-inspired centres are doing and all those different kinds of things. Just develop an approach, run with it. Make everyone do it. There's always a small group of people that will want to go, oh, no, but I want to do this. I want to have learning stories from the child's point of view. I want to have X, Y, Z. Develop that approach. Spend as much consultation time as you can. Not too much, but, you know, make sure people have felt heard and on board. But then develop an approach and stick with it, particularly, you know, with the educational leader, because, you know, they'll be answering lots of questions about particular things. You'll have to be regularly redirecting people, putting the guardrails back up to people so they understand what they're doing. Develop that approach and really just stick to it, even when you kind of want to go off or down on other highways, is really stick to it as best you can. And then with the quality improvement plan, I just have the educational leader regularly meets and works alongside educators to support the requirements of the educational program. Putting in that plan that, you know, it's expected that the ed leader is working directly alongside educators, for me, is critical and crucial. Having that in the quality improvement plan means you can then think of ways that make sense for your service to do that. You know, from small services to large services, how can we make sure that goal is being met and those expectations being met? All right, that's it for 7.2.2. I can't believe we're up to 7.2.3 next week, which is the last element of the National Quality Standard. It's been a great journey. Thanks to everyone who's taken it with me. As I've sort of said in the last few episodes, we'll have that episode, then a wrap-up episode for Quality Area 7, and then I think a wrap-up episode of some kind for the entire NQS. I'm still thinking about what that might look like. Thanks to everyone who's been listening. Share this with people if you think it might be useful to them. And until next week, it's goodbye from me.